Welcome to SesterCast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Kathy Campbell. Hey, Kathy, how are you doing today?
Hi, Jean. I'm doing great.
Are you excited about this episode?
I am, especially with, I feel like this episode has a very different atmosphere to it, especially compared to last episode. Last one was kind of a comedy of errors, shall we say. And this one was very much darker. And more intense. And a lot more graphic.
Oh, yes. Yes. Episodes,
bits of it.
but no glue gun, so.
No, but there was the knife.
There was a knife. It's true. It's. I agree. This is a completely different feel, this episode. And I was trying to figure out, like, what do I feel about it as a whole? And one of the things is, I think this episode is such a transition episode. So many threads are left hanging at the end of it that it's clear, like, this goes, you know, from where we were with Allison and Donnie in the Variations Under Domestication episode, so showing pretty much what happens at their house when things go haywire, to we're going into clubs and to basements and to all sorts of dark, scary areas, both physically and mentally, that it is a big switch. One of the other things that I think is interesting about this episode, sort of in the theme of our podcast, is now we're really watching the other characters find out about the clones. I'm pretty sure at this point, it's only Felix and Paul who know they're clones besides the clones themselves.
Well, and Olivier and Thomas.
Olivier and Thomas, of course, knew they were clones since before the show began. They are helper characters versus, I'm thinking about Art and Donnie and Mrs. S, who are very close to the characters, the clone characters themselves. So at some point, Art is going to find out, right?
Right.
Not in this episode, we see that. Donnie, when is he going to find out? See, I don't even remember how these characters find out about the clone thing. And I'm excited to watch that as well.
And I'm excited to watch it now that I know that it's going to happen. I mean, because there is the assuming that everyone will find out at the end, because that's kind of how it goes. Or they die before they find out. Like, those are really the two options in a plot line. And so knowing that Donnie finds out makes me happy. And I mean, Art finding out is going to come. And I'm just really excited to see how it plays out.
Yeah, me too. So I thought an interesting thing in this episode, and I want your opinion as a first time watcher, is what did you learn about Helena? Like, did you feel like in this episode you come much further to understanding where she comes from and her motivations?
Helena's background really came through as a more significant reason as to why she is how she is. You know, she was raised in a nunnery in the Ukraine and then got taken by Thomas and his group to indoctrinate her into this cult world, but she's never really belonged. I'm guessing the nunnery wasn't very family oriented. It wasn't a cozy, happy, you know, growing up period, to the point where I'm guessing that when she met Thomas and the flying fish people, which is how I think of them in my mind, they gave her affection in a way that as a child she would latch onto. She's now placed back into this world where she has these clones, and everything that she's been taught in the past is changed. Like, her entire brain is just, like, exploded, because Sarah is the first clone, I'm guessing, that she's actually talked to. The others she just kind of killed, whether shooting them from afar or
right.
If she killed any others, we don't know. But so she, by actually talking to Sarah and seeing that, oh, she's not this terrible monster that Thomas has been telling her.
Right.
She's really got to go through this kind of like mental battle versus the only people that have ever been, you know, kind to her versus this clone who's actually talking to her and also being kind to her.
Right.
So I love how she's no longer an evil character. You know, it's all those shades of gray that really make characters fantastic. And I just, I'm really excited to see how she goes through.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's a good point about this episode is we gain empathy for Helena, and we don't see her as just the villain of the piece anymore. And obviously, me having watched now 49 episodes of Orphan Black, I've learned more about Helena, you know, over the years, and I do have empathy with her. However, I was interested to see if, like, at what point she becomes a sympathetic character that someone watching it for the first time says, okay, that's really interesting. She's being integrated into the
Clone Club.
The Clone Club, right.
Yeah. Well, and now we have answered that problem for you. The answer is episode 6.
Episode 7, actually. That's what we're up to.
Oh, that's right. We are on 7.
Yeah. I had to go back because this episode 6, you know, which is the famous Donnie and Allison show, Helena's not even in that one at all.
Right.
So I went back to episode 5 to see where did we leave off with Helena? Because in the cold open for this show, there's a very short scene of Helena and Thomas, who is her caretaker. We could call him her monitor in a sense, although, you know, she's aware of him taking care of her and directing her activities. They did show his ring, by the way. Did you notice that?
Yes. I think it's a flying fish.
Okay. Now. Okay. That makes sense with the knife.
Right. And that made me look at it different than before. Because anytime you see wings, you're like, oh, it's a bird.
Right.
Except then between the knife and seeing it again with a different, like, thinking, it looks like it's a flying fish.
Yeah. The other thing with wings, as we've talked about before, is an angel. And
right.
And Helena's been referred to as an angel, which is interesting. But flying fish, I think we're going to find out more about the flying fish people soon-ish. But okay. It's so interesting to me personally that I have watched this. I know exactly what is going to happen in the big broad strokes, but exactly how they get there, I've totally forgotten.
I understand.
And I'm not watching ahead. Like, I'm not binging and saying, oh, I need to find out what happens in 8 and 9 and 10, because I'm watching it with you now. So probably good for my overall productivity level too, to not binge watch Orphan Black for the nth time. So yeah. So in the beginning of the show, there's a little bit about Cosima and Sarah talking about Paul. There's Paul and Olivier, and man, I hate Olivier just from the beginning. I don't know why the guy is so creepy. I mean, I can't put my finger on it why, but it's that passive aggressive oiliness. I don't know. So
yeah, well, and he has a facial expression that just, like, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Whatever excuse is given, he doesn't take an excuse for an answer. I found him less creepy this episode and more manipulative, if that makes sense. Because you learn a little bit more about, like, what he's doing. And yes, super creepy when he's in his office with Paul tied up and Sarah comes down and is just in awe of seeing one of them in person.
Yeah.
And he definitely was creepy there, but in a different type of creepy than he had been before. Because before he was creepy man behind the curtain type. And this time he was just a creepy lecher.
Lecher. That's a good word, actually. Even
yeah.
He has that quality. So, yeah, so we get a new setting in this episode, which the Club Neo-Lucian, which Olivier apparently yes. owns and does all his evil business down in the basement of. And I like the introduction to this club is Felix and Sarah sitting outside wondering if Paul is down there and what's going on. And Sarah's saying she's going to go in and find out. And Felix says, no, Clubland is my world. And
I know. I love it.
Clubland is my world.
And he pulls out his magical box of makeup
right.
to get his like eyeliner on. And it was fantastic, especially because Felix is a master manipulator
yeah.
in a very subtle way. And so goes in and he's like, oh yeah, this totally belong here.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to mention Olivier. And then a freaky leaky lady comes out who you learn later is Astrid. And Felix's reaction was fantastic when he's all, I.
That was pretty funny, you know, and to clarify, she's the one with the white eye. So I was like, oh, haha, it's a pun.
Yes. Because he obviously got distracted and could not think of anything other than the fact that she had one white eye.
Yeah. And so she's the one that explains a little bit about Neo-Lucian to Felix. And I like, you know, meanwhile, they're walking around this club where people are, you know, all kinds of exotic biomods, maybe just costumes, makeup, hair, is all kind of crazy. And Felix is drinking it all in very enthusiastically, right? Because he's Clubland is his world, and this is the ultimate club.
Yeah.
And I like the line where he says, a philosophy so physical makes for a handsome tribe.
So, yes. I love that.
Yeah, that's, and that's true. You know, it's a very visual cult. He does see Paul. Felix sees Paul. He follows him out. Of course, Paul collars him right when he comes outside, as we know he will, because
right.
he is Mr. Black Ops. And, but Sarah shows up to call him off, and Paul has had this very weird meeting with Olivier, where Olivier is giving him a questionnaire about his relations with Beth and how would you say she's responding to you. You used to say she was a cold fish. And yeah, I think that's the lecherous part too, that he's coldly delving into their sex life and supposedly in the name of science.
This has been his life's work. Like, this is a significant portion of everything. We learn that he believes in the Neo-Lucianist.
Right.
Ism-ness, because he went to Argentina to get a tail.
Yes.
Which is so creepy.
Right. Hold that tail thought.
We'll get there later.
Very important to the ending of this episode. But agreed. I mean, it's hard not to think of a tail. When I say don't think of a tail,
yeah.
you're thinking of the tail. Because the tail is so creepy.
I have to think of the tail. It's so creepy. It's so creepy.
So Paul has this interview session with Olivier, but he leaves. Sarah was worried about him, and that's why she was there at the club with Felix trying to find out. She was worried about him, but she was also worried what he might be doing. So that's an interesting dichotomy, because that dichotomy evolves over this episode, and I think that's one of the most important parts of this episode.
Yeah, because she doesn't really trust him yet.
She doesn't trust him.
Not fully all the way.
Right. So they go back to Beth's apartment, Sarah and Paul, and he's asking questions about the clones, and he asks Sarah if she knows that someone is killing the clones killing them off. And she pretends like she doesn't know about that, even though she clearly does. She says, at least it's not you. She wants to take off and see Kira. And Paul says, take my car in case you're being followed. You know, go get my car out of the garage. And he says, I'm supposed to protect you. At least let me do that. And she gives him a look where you're like, oh, he's protecting me. And so, like, for whatever little scraps of romance this series has, that's one of them. And you see she looks at him in a different light. And she goes and gets the car, or she's going to get into the car in the basement. And, of course, right away, there's Helena on her back. She can see her in the reflection. She turns around. Helena's like, not here. I'm not here to hurt you. We just need to talk. Let's have lunch.
And eat.
Let's have lunch. And Sarah's like, lunch? Question mark. One of my favorite interactions, because right then, cue up Sonny and Cher, I've Got You, Babe.
Yes.
Which is the funniest soundtrack for Helena and Sarah having lunch in a diner. Or I would say Helena having Jell-O with lots of sugar poured on top of it and Sarah looking disgusted.
Well, because she had already eaten the pancakes and waffles.
Okay. Sarah's looking very wary. Helena really wants to be friends. In fact, she says, I had a dream we were friends and I've seen it. It's going to happen. Sarah's not convinced. Then it turns scary out of the blue. Helena's threatening Sarah and says, if you don't give me the names of other clones, and she calls them sheep. As Thomas said, the way to the shepherd is through the sheep. And the sheep metaphor is also important, you know, throughout Orphan Black, I think, because that is the original cloned animal was a sheep, Dolly the sheep.
Yeah.
So Dolly. It's not just a religious reference. It's also a science reference. Helena writes down her phone number and says, call me with the name of a sheep or you will be the first to die. So that's pretty scary.
Well, and especially because in the first part of the scene, you can tell that Helena's trying to really hard. She's probably never had a friend before. She doesn't know what exactly you're supposed to do with friends. As we delve more into Helena especially, it really calls into question, you know, that whole nature versus nurture, which is something that's been mentioned before several times. And like, Helena is an exact replica, but is a very different type of person.
Right.
And very different morality and very different options for living her life.
Yeah, a key theme of Orphan Black. We've got nature versus nurture. What makes a family? And Helena has no family. She just has Thomas, and he doesn't seem to be a really great family member to have.
Although to her, you know, he is the only type of family that she does have or has had, and the only one that shows any sort of affection. He pets her hair. He holds her. Like, yes, it was right after he threatened her.
Right.
But to someone who has never experienced real friendship, family, etc., like, you latch onto whatever affection you can get.
Yeah, it's true. And that's, I mean, yes, it's a weird family unit, the two of them, but the dynamics you find in families everywhere of that both nurturing and threatening and demanding. So you're right, that's that is a family, just not a very healthy one. On the other hand, we have the super healthy family, at least in terms of support and structure, is Mrs. S. She's the opposite of Thomas. And there's some great Mrs. S. scenes in this episode. Sarah wants to know more about her background now that she knows that she's a clone, and S. doesn't know that she's a clone yet, but she says, you know, if you need to go back to go forward, I'll support that, but you should let me know because it could still be dangerous. And she tells her a little bit of the story of how Sarah came to her through a network of underground, you know, resistance folks in Britain during the Thatcher era. And they called them Children in the Black. So that's where we find out why the show's called Orphan Black, right?
Ah, I totally missed that. That makes sense.
Yeah. So she explains, you know, we had kids in the black. We were supposed to hide them. And we didn't ask why, because the less we knew, the better it would be. Mrs. S. says right before her colleague Carlton was arrested, he told her, get them hidden, get Sarah hidden. Felix is just a regular orphan.
hide her deeper, I think is what.
Yeah. And that's when S. takes Felix and Sarah to North America. You appreciate, like, the sacrifice of S. for these two children. And then she turns around and says, I can keep Kira safe like I kept you safe. And that scene ends in a big hug between Sarah and S., which is just makes my heart warm.
Yes, my love for Mrs. S. grows exponentially every time.
Yeah. So another set that we haven't been to in a while is our favorite, Law and Order, clone version.
Yes.
There's a lot of precinct scenes and morgue scenes in this because the data is coming back or the data is missing. In fact, that opens up with DeAngelis, Art's new partner, saying, Beth's paperwork is a mess. It's like she's never done it before.
Which was hilarious. But earlier in this, we learned that the DNA is matching between the shooter and Jane Doe.
Right.
And so because of that, the head cop dude goes crazy and is like, is there someone inside that's doing this or is it like contamination, and just tells them that they need to start over from the beginning because it's all messed up. And so that's why DeAngelis goes and digging through quote-unquote Beth's files and paperwork and all of that junk.
For the benefit of listeners who don't even remember who the hell Jane Doe and the shooter are, because that was, you know, only 3 or 4 episodes ago, but it seems a lifetime ago. But Jane Doe is Katya Obergen, whose body was found in the quarry. And the shooter they have the blood from is Helena. And it's from that horrible bathroom scene. They had lots of blood to test. And yeah, so they did finally match the DNA. But now what about the fingerprints? And they're missing. And they have a great trip to the morgue, if you like that kind of thing. I finally just turned my head when they got to the finger straightener.
Yeah. See, and I was fine with that. That was like, well, yeah, they got to, because when you die, everything kind of tightens up. And so in order to get the fingerprints out, you got to... But yes, the sound effects were intense. And the morgue attendant and the head CSI lady, I don't know her name.
I think she's the medical examiner.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. Her. It's like, you are in the wrong department.
Yeah. To DeAngelis. DeAngelis is excited about the finger straightener. And which just makes us dislike her even more. So the wheels are turning on several fronts. There's the police front. There's the Neolution front. So Dr. Leakey calls Olivier and says, you've got a problem. That's not Beth. You should bring her in. And that sets off the crisis of the show, which is Paul has to come back in. And Olivier tells him that Beth's not Beth, which he, of course, knows, but he's not. He's pretending like he doesn't know.
Right.
And Olivier is threatening Paul by saying, if you've got to bring her in and we make all this Afghanistan stuff go away, you get your life back. And Paul's playing it very cool and says, okay. And he says, can I have my phone back? And he gets his phone. Olivier says to put it on speaker, and he calls Beth. He calls Sarah, but he says he's calling Beth.
Well, and he starts the phone call with hi, Sarah, or hi, Beth, or the greeting, because normally he's been calling her Sarah, and so Sarah's smart enough to realize that, oh, hey, this, I gotta be wary, like it's kind of a code word almost, which I thought was really smart.
And she has to use her Beth voice.
Yes.
And he's supposed to tell her, come in, and he's going to bring her to Olivier. But then he says, how does he say it? It's exciting.
They know you're not Beth and you need to run.
Yeah. And that just kicks off all kinds of panic because Olivier and Astrid is there, this very scary looking, evil, white eyed Astrid. And Paul tries to attack Olivier, but Astrid stabs him with some kind of sedative and puts him out. So now Beth knows that she's supposed to run, but she also knows Paul's in trouble. And because he lent her his car,
yes,
she feels obligated to make sure that he's safe.
Which everyone's sense of self-protection is kind of skewed. And Felix is the sane one and is like, dude, he told you to run. Like,
right. He says, I get it. Black Ops Paul proved he was down with you for real.
Yes.
So, you know, Felix is, of course, reading the situation and his sister perfectly. And Sarah says, I've got an idea. Somebody I can call in. And she calls Helena.
Yes, which was brilliant.
Yeah. And Helena's like, do you have the name of a sheep for me? And Sarah says, Olivier. That is not a name of a sheep.
Yes. And before this is where Helena had set up this little tableau of a picture of Paul, and she had food, and was like, how was your day? I had a something day, and I did the shopping and the eating or something, and it was so funny because she was trying so hard. She was really trying so hard. And it was really sweet, especially, you know, we're starting to like her more. Which,
yeah. Yeah, that is a great scene. And exactly for that reason, that it really makes you realize that she's a very damaged creature who wants to be good. She wants to be good. She thinks she's good even. So
yeah.
She wants to really be good. So now we're back at Club Neil Lucian. Sarah tells Felix, I'm going in. If I don't come out in like 10 minutes, call Art. Here's his card. Tell him everything. And I was like, really? 10 minutes doesn't sound like long enough.
Like, Paul's Black Ops. If he can't get out, like if he's still in there, like there's a reason. And maybe your street smarts aren't quite smart enough. Like,
so this is the final scene, everything happening at once, where Sarah goes down to find Paul, and she runs into Astrid, evil Astrid, who brings her in and says, Beth is here to see you. So now Beth is tied up, you know, she gets a bag over her head, and she's tied up somewhere in that creepy basement. But Paul is sitting in the chair, he's come to, I guess, from his sedation. Olivier is talking to him, but Olivier's back is to the monitors. Paul can see this other woman coming in with the fluffy hair and the hoodie. And I'm thinking, Olivier, you turn your back to your security cameras? But whatever. In such a moment, wouldn't you like at least position yourself so you could see keep an eye on what was going on?
It means that Helena can arrive and save the day, kick Astrid's butt, and...
Right. So she whacks Astrid, and then we don't see exactly what happens, but because Paul sees that on the monitor, Olivier looks up, and he sees that Astrid's now knocked out on the floor next to the woman with the black pillowcase over her head, which he assumes is Sarah.
Real quick, though, before it cuts to Olivier seeing Astrid knocked out, Helena was choking Sarah to get a name.
Yeah.
And that's why, because...
Oh, right.
Because Helena was like, yes, I'm going to save you, but not really. Like, I need a name or I'll kill you, too. You know?
Yeah.
And so then Olivier sees that Astrid's knocked out and there's someone in the hood. So he's like, great, I got to take care of this myself. And pulls off the hood and Helena's like, I want to see your tail.
And yes, this scene, we don't really have to describe it into great of detail, but we see the tail, which is, you know, a fantastic special effect.
Yes. In its creepiness.
Yeah, because, of course, Helena has overpowered Olivier, no problem. And she has him pinned down, and it's a very creepy scene, you know, with Helena pulling his pants down to see the tail. And then she says, I have a message for your bosses from Thomas. And then she cuts off the tail, and it's gross. It's so, so gross.
It's so gross.
Yeah. So, and of course, Olivier's howls in pain. Yes. And we don't feel the slightest bit sorry for him because he's been so yucky and creepy.
It was so, so creepy. But, and earlier when he's talking about the tail, he talks about how it's, you know, fully sensory and he can move it himself and nerves. So, of course, it's going to freaking hurt. It's like cutting off a limb without the bone.
Well, I don't know the entire anatomical details of that tale, but these events wrap up because Sarah frees Paul and says, oh, I guess there's a few things I should have told you. And he's like, yeah, right. Which is cute because now they're like a couple, you know, like now that she's saved him, he saved her. Felix is on the phone to Art, which seems like that took more than 10 minutes, but whatever. Paul and Sarah appear at the window and he's like, oops, wrong number. Hangs up on Art, even though he's already clearly told him that he needs to talk to him about Beth Childs.
And we haven't even touched on Cosima and Delphine's bits.
Let's put a pin in that now. And, okay. Because we can. I was thinking about that too, but I think we can. Not a lot happens, but we can talk about that with them. But. Okay. But this part is so like, this is like, bam, bam, bam.
Yes.
Sarah gets captured. Astrid gets whacked. Olivier gets his tail cut off. Sarah frees Paul. Felix is on the phone with Art, but he hangs up. And it wraps up with the club scene of Helena in the club dancing. With the tail. This is the first time I noticed that she had the tail in her hand. And then she like throws it into the crowd, I think. It's creepy. Yeah, it's gross.
It's just so creepy.
Yeah. And so Felix, Paul, and Sarah are back at Felix's apartment. And now we get the kissing part, which is so funny because from episode one, they've been fooling around. But it's because Sarah was Beth or pretending to be Beth.
Right. And
since the revelation that she's not Beth, there hasn't been any hanky-panky yet. So that's what makes this like their first kiss between Sarah and Paul. And I love it. But of course, Felix, he's already like, you know what? Three's a crowd. I'm going off to the bar. Bye bye.
But he does do a very sweet half smile as he's halfway through, like leaving the apartment. He kind of like is listening to them, you know, having their moment and has a little Mona Lisa type smile, practically. Like, it's just really, it's cute because his sister has a relationship that's making him happy.
Yeah, it is a classic, and it did warm my, like, you know, adolescent romance movie heart to see that finally Sarah and Paul recognize that they actually care for each other.
So
it finishes, that scene finishes with Sarah and Paul kissing as Felix leaves the apartment. And speaking of kissing, we haven't even talked about Cosima and Delphine back in Minneapolis with shenanigans going on there.
Yes. Yeah. So first off, Cosima's apartment, this is the first time we've really seen more of the apartment other than just like right around the desk. And all I could think of was Holy Fabrics Beth. So many, like, layers, the wallpaper and the patterns on everything. It was just very opulent, and it didn't feel like what I thought Cosima would live in. It felt very high class, almost, because the choices of the materials and whatnot were really more bourgeois than I was expecting for a girl from Berkeley.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. And also, it's not like any graduate student housing I've lived in.
Right. Right.
But I like the, I like Cosima having fashion crisis.
Yes.
I do that all the time, putting something on, taking something off. I've got 1 minute to be ready. And in fact, Delphine shows up on time, and Cosima is still wearing a camisole, and she says, I'm running late. And then she's like, she shrugs with that little cute Cosima thing. She says, actually, I'm always late.
Right.
Confession. And, you know, that is one of my personality flaws too, is that I tend to be a few minutes late to everything. And so let's see, the two of them are going out to dinner. They just have a date, right? Like, that's, is that, and I mean, obviously, Cosima thinks it's a date, not only because she wants to date Delphine, but also she doesn't know Delphine and Leaky are in cahoots yet.
Yes. And she in a conversation with Sarah earlier, talks about how, like, I'm monitoring the monitor.
Right.
And she's using that as an excuse to allow herself to have this attraction that she's had.
Yeah.
to her. I mean, it's very obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a really fun phone scene with Sarah and Cosima, because Sarah is really being, you know, annoying, I think, and very, very bossy with the, stay away from Delphine, Cosima, stay away. You don't know what you're doing. And Cosima's like, leave me alone. And Sarah's like, okay, I'll mind my business. You mind your business. And she hangs up and she says, bitch. And then Cosima, on her line, hangs up too, and she's like, bitch.
Just the same thing. Yeah, I was like, oh, they're twinsies.
So Cosima and Delphine are having dinner, like probably a hotel or something, and Dr. Leaky walks into that location, and Delphine is like, ooh, there's Dr. Leaky, like she doesn't know him.
Right.
In fact, Cosima says, you should, you know, you're ready to move on to your next boyfriend. You should date him. And he's like, oh, he's much too old, even though we saw her in the hotel room with him last episode. And I like that Cosima says, oh, but he has such a sexy brain.
Yes. it was entertaining.
Yeah. And so Delphine does invite him over and they talk. And this is the first time that I don't know if it's the first time he mentions the Dyad Institute, but it's the first time we start hearing about this place called Dyad, where they do all this research. And as Cosima says, yeah, you've perfected a number of proprietary cloning techniques. I think you can tell from this episode, there's going to be more about Dyad. And in fact, he says, you should apply to work at Dyad. And I'm thinking, this is just not how it works.
Right.
But of
course, does if you're one of the clones that I'm guessing they possibly created.
Right. Yes. I don't know. It takes nepotism to a whole new level.
Oh, yes. That's very true.
So now Cosima has Dr. Leaky's card from Dyad. They're back at Cosima's apartment. And Cosima says, like, but let's be honest about what's really going on. And she kisses Delphine.
Yes.
And then Delphine kind of backs off. And Cosima's got that, oh, did I forget what she says. It's like, did I just make a totally wrong assumption? And Delphine's like, oh, it's okay. Don't worry about it, and leaves. And there's Cosima. The camera ends on Cosima just looking like, oh, I really screwed that up.
Yeah.
And I found that very heartbreaking, because who has not had that experience of messing up or thinking they've messed up with somebody that they're really attracted to? And I thought, ah, oh, poor Cosima, she's not going to go to sleep right now, and you know, have she's gonna replay that scene and second guess herself now.
Right. Well, especially because there's already this layer of her thinking she had it all figured out, that she, you know, right. Hey, I'm going to monitor the monitor. I'm going to take control of this. And then is like, oh no, I kissed her and she didn't feel that way, when the audience is kind of like, oh, she was totally playing you. Mm. Like, because you saw interactions and the way that she reacted to Cosima earlier, to where you could see why Cosima would react the way that she did and think that there was something more, when really Delphine was probably just trying to get closer to her so she could introduce her to Dr. Leakey and right. all of the shenanigans right. that are, I'm guessing, going to happen in the future.
Yes. Spoiler alert, there will be shenanigans. I like how you picked up on that. I hadn't thought of that, when the fact that Cosima thought she was cocky about it, you know, that she could manage Delphine, and in the end she's left wondering, how did I screw that up? And it's sad. It's a sad face.
It's really a especially since she had been so on top of it. You know, she was a scientist, she had this information and this knowledge, and she was one-upping in that she knew her monitor, and then it just kind of all crashed down really hard.
Okay. So that takes us to the final scene, back in the precinct. Art's getting off the phone with Felix, and DeAngelis is sitting in front of her computer and says, hey, come back here. There's a match on the Jane Doe print.
And the prints are a match to Sarah Manning. And Art comes over and you just see this, like, look of what on his face? Because who is Sarah Manning and why does she look like Beth? Especially because he just hung up the phone where someone called to say, I have information about Beth Childs.
I think it's an appropriate moment to say, Art is one of my favorite characters. I can't wait till he finds out about the clone thing, because I'm looking forward to seeing how that happens and how he reacts. But he's been such an interesting character compared to everybody else around him. He's trying to be objective, and he's not easily seduced by Sarah or Sarah pretending to be Beth, but he's not mean to her. He has her best interests at heart, and everything he's done so far has been to protect Beth. So what does it mean that these fingerprints come up that for somebody and she looks like Beth?
But yeah, I thought it was a traditional way of ending the episode, and definitely leaves me really excited to watch the next one. Unsurprising.
Me too. What a surprise. Well,
I know, I'm shocked.
This isn't the episode that made you say, you know, I know enough now, and I'm done with Orphan Black. Nope. Speaking of being done with Orphan Black, I know this doesn't apply to you in the near future, but it's only 2 days until the final episode of the whole series is aired, and I don't know if I can handle it.
Well, my question for you is this. Do you feel like it's wrapping up well?
Yes.
Okay.
I think it's wrapping up well. I don't think there will be a kind of outcry of like, oh, that was the worst finale ever, which you hear with other shows. And I'm attached to these characters. I can't see them, you know, whatever. I love the show. I think love the show now too. So
yes, I do.
I'm looking forward to us getting to the episode 50 together, and we have a little ways to go. So maybe we better wrap this one up.
Yes, let's. Thank you so much for listening to us ramble slightly about this fantastic episode of Orphan Black. You can find us on Twitter. We're at SestraCast, and online at SestraCast.com. We are hosted as well on the fantastic Incomparable Network. If you enjoyed this show, feel free to check out the other ones on the network. There might be something else you enjoy. You can find Gene on Twitter at MacGenie, and I am at Mrs. Soup. Drop us a line, let us know what you think. If you're enjoying this watch through, if it's your first time, or if you are just as excited as Jean is for the series finale, let us know what you think. We love your feedback, and I hope you have a fantastic day. Bye.